instituted, sir. Most of the time we look in our Bibles and we see Genesis chapter 1, and before that we have a page that tells us that that's part of the Old Testament. But that's not right, because the Old Testament, go to Exodus chapter 19, isn't given until sometime later. When we dealt with Genesis 12, and as you go to Exodus 19, we'll look, put a finger there, and then go to over to Genesis chapter 12 with me. First read in Genesis chapter 12. Let us begin in verse 1. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. When God first deals with Abraham, he's dealing with him, and he specifically mentions blessings. So I'm just going to make a timeline over here and mark Genesis 12 and blessings. How is God going to bless Abraham? Is that mentioned in Genesis 12? Yeah, he's going to have a large following. And part of it is going to be through his nations. But how is he going to be blessed? We know that God's going to give him a bunch of things. We've already talked about the land that they're going to inherit. We know about the children and the families that Abraham's going to have. We've talked about the thrones and the kingdoms that has come from Abraham. But the blessings, how does he get those? The blessings?
From the other people, the Gentiles.
Well, no, God said that he's going to bless him. He's going to use the covenants of the old and the new. The first one is going to be here. Go to Exodus 19. Let's turn over. The timetable's going to keep going here through, and we'll just mark off Exodus 19. Remember that Israel does not become a nation. They're not classified as a nation until they actually leave Egypt. This is my son, the Bible says. So in Exodus 19, when we look in verse, let's just begin in verse 1 just to get a good picture. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. Alright, so we have this covenant. He has obeying his voice. Exodus 19, we're going to start seeing about obedience. And from this time on, we're going to deal with obedience, right? And they're going to have to keep it. And we see this as a conditional covenant. What I mean by that is that everything else that we've learned about so far, dealing with Abraham being a great nation and of a seed and of the kings and of the land, and all of that is just God saying, this is what I'm going to do. It's never a condition put upon it. It's just all God one way delivering this covenant, and he's binding himself to it. The law that God gives Moses is the exception. It's a conditional covenant. It's a, if you do this, then you will have this. And we can see the conditional nature. Go to chapter 15. Just Exodus chapter 15. We're going to do a lot of flipping back and forth. So just kind of get ready for that. Exodus in chapter 15. says in verse 26, and if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord. Notice if those ifs. This is going to be signified by ifs. If you do this, then. If then. He says, if you hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in His sight, and will give ear to His commandments, and keep all His statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. So they saw, this is when they're dealing with all the pestilence and everything that happened with the Egyptians. He says, if you do what I tell you, then I won't curse you with the pestilence. Well, we read already in Exodus 19, you saw that conditional nature from there. Just flip right back as we're on our way onto the other side of it. Back to Exodus 19, we see those words again in verse 5 kind of pop up. If you will obey my voice indeed. If you will keep my covenant, then you're going to be a peculiar people. Then you're going to be a treasure and a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. So it's contingent upon them doing something. Go over to Deuteronomy 28. We'll see that again. This is a favorite passage of prosperity preaching, Deuteronomy 28. Although, I wouldn't give them that much credit. They like about a quarter of this chapter is what they like. They don't like the whole thing. They stop at about a quarter of the way through. Deuteronomy, somewhere around here, we'll put over here, 28. Let's just start in verse 1, I guess. It shall come to pass. We'll wait till everybody gets there. Deuteronomy 28. And in verse 1. And it shall come to pass, if. Notice it starts off with the if. If thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe and do all his commandments, which I commanded thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee if thou shalt hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God. So the original plan of blessing was through this testament that God gives to Moses. This is going to be, the blessings are going to be filtered through the law of Moses back to the children of Israel in an if-then condition if you do this. So we see what they'll have. Blessed, verse 3. Shalt thou be in the city, and blessed shalt thou be in the field, and blessed shalt thou be shall be the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy ground, and the fruit of thy cattle, and the increase of thy kind, and in the flocks of thy sheep. Blessed shalt thou be in the basket, and in the store. And it just goes on, when you come in, and when you go out. Verse 7, the Lord shall cause thy enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way, and flee before thee seven ways. The Lord shall command the blessing upon thee in thy storehouse, and in all that thou settest thy hand unto. And he shall bless thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. The Lord shall establish thee an holy people unto himself, as he has sworn unto thee, if thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God and walk in his ways. And all the people of the earth shall see that thou art called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of thee. And the Lord shall make thee plenteous in goods, in the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy cattle, and the fruit of thy ground, and the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers to give thee. The Lord shall open unto thee his good treasure, and heaven to give the rain unto thy land in his season, and to bless all the work of thine hand. And thou shalt lend unto many nations, and thou shalt not borrow. And the Lord shall make thee the head, and not the tail. And I shall be above only, and shall not be beneath, if that thou hearken unto the commandments of the Lord thy God, which I commanded thee this day, to observe and to do them. And I shall not go aside from any of the words which I command thee this day, to the right hand or to the left, to go after other gods, to serve them. So we've got 14 verses, and it's all about how, if you do this, then God is going to bless you tremendously in every endeavor that you do. Remember, he promised Abraham, I'm going to bless you. Well, this is one of the modes by which he's going to accomplish that. The blessings are going to be filtered through the law. If they obey and keep the law, then God will just outpour His blessings and His treasures upon the children of Israel, and they will be exalted. And that's a promise that He gives them. And we see this as a condition. Now, if we look, if we continue to read, and why I say they like about 25% of this chapter is because it goes all the way to 68 verses, and they stop usually at around 14, because verse 15 takes a totally different turn. He says, "But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all His commandments and His statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and shall overtake thee." And then everything that they were blessed of in the first 14 verses, they're going to be cursed of in the following. And it gets into some pretty, just some horrible things dealing with all aspects of life. So blessings will come from this as well as curses. All will flow through the law of Moses. And it's conditional. There's 613 or so of these ordinances, and they are to obey them to the letter. And that is the conditional nature of this. Notice how this type of language is foreign from what we were dealing with before. No inclination or intimation of they have to do anything in order for God to provide the promise. This is an exception. This is the only one that's like this that He deals with in the nation of Israel. Any questions before we go on?
Are these deaths, if they do that, is a part of the law?
You have the law, and then you have this. If you do the law, then God's going to do this for you. If you don't do the law, then God's going to curse you in this manner. So the law is separate of itself. These are the conditions of their blessings or curses. And up to this point, we've dealt with everything else except for how God was going to bless the seed of Abraham. And this is one method that He uses to do so. So they have to keep these commandments, which are separate from this condition here. The condition is whether or not they do keep them.
I did have a question.
Yes. The dedication of these testaments. The New Testament, the book of Hebrews says, is dedicated with blood. Well, the Old Testament was as well. Let's look at the dedication ceremony in Exodus 24. One thing that people today who claim to follow this law in order to gain righteousness, one thing that they really miss is just how bloody this thing is. With the sacrifices that we'll get into comes the death of an animal. And every time the animal dies, there's all this blood in it, and all the blood is used to offer for the sacrifice. But just take a look at here how this thing is ratified. In Exodus 24. Alright, we're just going to read it kind of quickly. We've got 11 verses we're going to touch on, and then we'll just move on from it. He says, "And he said unto Moses, Come up unto the Lord, thou and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship ye afar off. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come nigh, neither shall the people go up with him. And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, All the words which the Lord has said, we will do." So they've already agreed to do this. All right, they voluntarily put themselves under this condition, and they all came out and they said, "Sure, we'll do this. This is no problem." So Moses wrote, verse 4, "All the words of the Lord, and rose up early in the morning and builded an altar under the hill and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen unto the Lord. And Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, All that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient." Remember the whole thing about obedience. We're going to do it. We'll agree to that. So Moses, it says, took the blood and sprinkled it on the people. On the people. Not around the people. On the people. And said, "Behold the blood of the covenant, which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words. Then went up Moses and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet as it were a paved work of sapphire stone, and as it were the body of heaven in his clearness. And upon all the nobles of the children of Israel he laid not his hand, also they saw God and did eat and drink. And so this is the dedication of the covenant. It included them getting just covered with blood. He sprinkles it upon them. And it kind of gives it that realness. It's like, okay, this is for real. This isn't for play. There's actual blood on us if we don't do this, right? And they understand that. They understand the sacrifice and what needed to get done. And it's also signified, as you see here, they saw the God of Israel, and you see as this light from heaven. This is what people are referencing when they say the Shekinah glory. This is this. So you have the God of Israel present. You have the blood present. It's on the people. It's theirs. You wanted it. You got it. It's yours. So who's he dealing with here? We've got to make sure that we understand. The Old Testament was given to Israel. All right. This is going to be a big deal when we deal with the New Testament. But for right now, we're just making sure that we understand that this is to Israel. This was never given to you or to I. This was for the nation of Israel. Now, the key element of the law was the blood sacrifice. There's a lot of commandments. This is what you do, this is what you don't do. But for the offerings, there's a blood sacrifice. Go to Leviticus 17. Dave's starting to realize why I already knew this verse. In Leviticus 17, if you look in verse 11, I only had him read the first part, but the rest of the verse is where I was going to this evening. He says, "For the life of the flesh is in the blood." Isn't that something? Scientists at this time obviously have no idea that within the blood, oxygen is carried, that it gets distributed from your lungs when you breathe it in, it goes into your blood so it can be distributed all throughout your body to give your organs life, right? Scientists had no clue, but the Bible does because he's God and he knows everything. So the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that maketh an atonement for the soul. So the central theme of the law is blood. And that cannot be taken out of here. It's all about blood. And this is a continuous thing. But there's different types of offering. We're just going to hit some of these. I'm going to give them to you so that you can reference them. Leviticus 1. Go to Leviticus 1. They're really going to be found through chapters 1 through chapter 7. We'll just hit on them, and then you can mark that down, and we don't have to necessarily go through all of them. Leviticus 1 and the 10th verse. "And if his offering be of the flocks, namely of the sheep or the goats, for a burnt sacrifice." There's a burnt sacrifice. They have to have a burnt offering. "He shall bring it male without blemish." There's also a meat offering. Look at chapter 2 and verse 1. And if you want to learn more about them, just read them on your own time. We just don't have the time to go through every single one of them. We got a meat offering. "And when any will offer a meat offering," chapter 2, verse 1, "unto the Lord, his offering shall be a fine flour, and he shall pour oil upon it and put frankincense thereon and bring it to Aaron," and so forth. Meat doesn't mean the flesh of an animal. Today we think of it as flesh of an animal. But it's really just any kind of meal or food. We say that an orange has flesh, right? It's the flesh of an orange. So we're not saying that it has literal meat. We're just saying that that's the body of it. Well, the word meat used to mean just simply food. So this is a food offering. It's made of flour, and you can read more about that. You have the offering, the oblation of the first fruits. Look down in verse 12. As for the oblation of the first fruits, you shall offer them unto the Lord, but they shall not be burnt on the altar for a sweet savor. The first fruits are what? That's from your crops, right? Right. That's what comes up first, right? They don't give God the leftovers. They give Him the ripe, fresh off the vine, and they don't burn those. There's also the peace offering. Look in chapter 3 and verse 1. And if his oblation be a sacrifice of peace offering, and if he offer it of the herd, whether it be a male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before the Lord. So when you have your burnt offering and you have your peace offering, those are going to be actual death of animals. The meat and the oblation of first fruits are not. We deal with the sin of ignorance. Look in chapter 4 and verse 2. That's 613 of these things, right? What if you just missed one? You didn't know that you sinned, and you sinned through ignorance. Sometimes we get caught like this, put it to you this way. Somebody hacks down a speed limit sign, and you don't know how fast you're supposed to go on a road. Well, there's still a limit on that road, and if a police officer catches you going over the limit, he can still write you a ticket, right? Because you're still violating the law. And you can say, hey, I didn't know. And, you know, if you go down and maybe you do the work and you take a picture of the fact that the sign was cut down, maybe the judge will let you go on it and you can get the pass through ignorance. Well, that doesn't happen very often, but maybe you could. Under the law, there was provision for that, just in case you did something that you didn't know that you weren't supposed to do, and you just sin through ignorance. Look in chapter 4 and in verse 2. Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a soul shall sin through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done, and shall do it against any of them, if the priest is anointed to do sin, and so forth, there's an offering that they can do to have themselves resolved of this ignorance. And then there's a trespass offering. And the trespass offering is, you know you're not supposed to do it, and you did it anyway. Alright? That's a trespass. It's like you went over the line. You knew the line was there. That's talked about in chapter 5. Look in chapter 5 and in verse 17. And if a soul sin and commit any of these things which are forbidden to be done by the commandments of the Lord, though he wist it not, yet is he guilty, and he shall bear his iniquity, and he shall bring a ram without blemish of the flock, with thy estimation for a trespass offering unto the priest, and the priest shall make an atonement for him concerning his ignorance wherein he erred, and wist it not, and it shall be forgiven him. It is a trespass offering. He has certainly trespassed against the Lord. Now all of these can be found, like I said, you can just go through Leviticus 1 through 7. The problem with these, go to Hebrews chapter 10. These priests, I mean, these guys were busy. I mean, they didn't really take breaks or any kind of holidays outside of the Sabbaths and so forth. It's all about blood, and it's of animals. And they're doing this thing continuously and daily. And you think about that, what that does to the mindset of the people. Right? Oftentimes, we think of people following the law and exactly. We think of them as, you know, not being very mindful of the law, right? Because people that try to practice it today, they're not killing these animals, right? They're not bringing the flock or their animal, their sacrifice up to their church, having the preacher with his knife and slit the throat so that they can offer up the sacrifice at the church, right? They're not doing this. Now, if they did, if you think about it, how much does that change your mentality as to the realization that sin equals death? Right? I mean, today we don't even, I mean, most of our food, it's already come, like we think that it comes in a plastic wrap at the store. Right? We forget that this thing had to be killed and butchered and ground up or whatever just so that we can eat it. We're very disconnected from death. We don't like death. We try to avoid it at all costs. But in Hebrews chapter 10, what I wanted to get at with these blood of animals, it really played on their mind, and they had a knowledge of their sin. But all of this was a shadow. Right? All of this was a shadow. Say I put my hand up here, you can see the shadow of my hand. It's in the shape of my hand. It looks like my hand, but is it my hand? No. But it tells me two things, right? The first thing it tells me is that there is something making the shadow. And number two, there's a source of light. Right? Because you can't have a shadow without having light. So what does that tell us? For law, verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 10, having a shadow of good things to come. What is a shadow of good things to come? It's all about the blessings. I'm going to make you a holy nation, a kingdom of priests. They didn't make it under the law, right? They never did make that under the law. All their blessings that they ended up being cursed, right? I mean, they didn't end up in Babylon because they were doing such a bang-up job. They ended up in Babylon because they disobeyed the Lord. They got scattered because they disobeyed the Lord. So, the law. Was it useless? No, it was very purposeful. It had a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually make the comers thereunto perfect. Anybody remember what I told you the word perfect meant? Complete, right? It comes from an old Latin word meaning complete. So the law, all of this, did it ever make Israel complete or whole? No, which means that they were incomplete, right? It didn't suffice. Even though they brought the sacrifices continually, year after year, for their atonement, and day after day, it talks about the sacrifices that were done daily. Let's keep looking here, verse 2. For then would they not have ceased to be offered. In other words, if the law brought them to the point where they were complete, they would not need to sacrifice anymore. But it didn't do that. Because that the worshippers once purged should have had no more conscience of their sins. But did that happen? No. But in those sacrifices, the ones under the law, there is a remembrance again made of sins every year, right? Every year they had to keep going back and offer their offering so that their consciousness and their awareness of their sin problem was there for them. For, verse 4, it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats should take away sins. So there needed to be another sacrifice. This was always meant to be a temporary solution. This was never going to be a permanent solution. Which is funny, because Christians today who were never given the law want to resurrect it, if you will, and bring it back to life today as if it's some kind of permanent fixture in God's dealings with mankind, when in fact it was always designed to be temporary and to fade away after time. Want to share that with the class? I'll let you get up here. I'm good at embarrassing students, so I was a substitute teacher. So it doesn't take away the sins, all right? They have a remembrance of it year after year, time after time. They have to continuously bring the best of the best to offer up as a sacrifice for their sins. And they saw the effect of sins, and they were very aware of the standards of it. Now, why was the law given, right? We think about this. Well, it was given to make Israel have a channel of blessing and to be a blessing and to be the head and be the tail, be the lender, not the borrower, and so forth. It wasn't given to make them complete. So why was it given? So you think you know?
So that all the world may become healed before God?
Well, part of it is, right, Romans 3 definitely plays into it, that all the world may become guilty before God. And it says that every mouth may be stopped, right? And you think about that. From the Garden of Eden, our mouth has been running. Right? And it's all about how good we are when you think about it. I mean, we're continuously trying to justify ourselves, right? And make ourselves better than what we are. In fact, that was the whole problem of eating the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We can decide good and evil on our own. We don't need God telling us what's good and what's evil. We can depend upon ourselves and our self-judgment. So the law was given to say, shut up. But it was given, and what shuts us up is when God declares His righteousness. Go to Leviticus 19. And then jump back to the Old Testament. If you remember the conversation that Job has with the Lord, you know, he's like, You know, he's questioning the Lord and questioning the Lord, and the Lord comes back and says, I got some questions for you. You know, like, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Eventually, Job gets to the point where he puts his hand over his mouth and he says, I've spoken too soon. Well, that's kind of what the law does with us. Leviticus 19, look in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say unto them, Ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. What does the law demonstrate? The holiness of God. His righteousness. Right? In fact, Paul even gives that credit in, I believe, Romans chapter 7. He says, hey, the law is holy and just and righteous. I'm the sinner. I'm the transgressor. The law is fine. He didn't do anything wrong. In fact, it's there to display the holiness of God and His glory, because through it, it shows us that, no, there's no way that we're going to be able to live up to His standards. In fact, if the sacrifices were not included in that law, then they would have a whole mess of problems to deal without any way to cover their sins. So it's also to give His standard, right? I mean, it's like, if you're going to be holy, this is how you be holy. Do this, don't do that. Do this, don't do that. 613 times, if you want to get God's holiness and God's righteousness, how are you going to do it? Well, you have to live this perfectly. Of course, the only man that did so, of course, was Jesus Christ. He came to fulfill the law and did so without blemish upon Him, which made Him the perfect sacrifice. So what else was the purpose of this law given? We have Israel. You think about the nation of Israel. Really, what is different between them and the Gentiles? I mean, you think about Abraham. Abraham was Abram. Abram was a Gentile. What's the difference between the children of Israel and the Gentiles? You want to know what it is? God says there's a difference. And He gave them the law to live differently, the separate rule of life. Go to chapter 11. We're in Leviticus. Go to chapter 11. He calls them holy. And the word holy doesn't mean sinless. Just like the word perfect doesn't mean sinless, right? You know, we've pressed that upon those words, but that's not what it means. Sanctified, set apart. So they are set apart because God called them out and set them apart. This is a rule of conduct. How do they live that way? How do they live differently? I mean, why can't they eat shellfish and pork? I mean, they're... You know, Genesis chapter 9, whenever Noah gets off the ark, all manner of food is acceptable. Right? So, at one time, bacon was allowed. But now it's not so much. Why? Think about it. You see someone who's not eating bacon. That's strange. Someone who doesn't like ham. The peculiar people that don't eat catfish or lobster or shrimp. I mean, there's rules. You can only eat these animals if their hoof is a certain way, and the types of food that they eat, you can only eat those. I mean, that's peculiar, right? That's different. And you're going to think them weird, and you're going to think them different. Well, this is a standard of their way of life. Here in chapter 11, just look over in verse 44. We'll look at verse 44. For I am the Lord your God. It's amazing how many times He has to tell the children of Israel this very fact. I am the Lord your God. Don't go after other ones. I'm the one. You shall therefore sanctify yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God, and you shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. And so there's a practical aspect of the law. They needed a rule of conduct for how they are going to live. This is how they are going to live. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. You cannot defile yourself. You have to keep yourself clean. And this is how you do so. And it gives them a distinctiveness about their about their identity. Look at what David says in the Psalms. Go to Psalm 119. King David was a big fan of the law, which is kind of ironic, seeing how he deserved nothing but death according to it for his actions and received assured mercies of God. But he is very eloquent in his speech, and when he writes, it's very poetic. You see in Psalm 119, we're going to look at a few verses. Start in verse 77. He says, "Let thy tender mercies come unto me, that I may live, for thy law is my delight." Isn't that something? He delights in the law. Look down in verse 97. "Oh, how I love thy law." Do you have an exclamation point on yours? Do you think David's excited about the law? I mean, he's also the same individual that understood that God, the same God of Israel, delivered Goliath, you know, through his hands, right? So he was a big believer in it. He says, "It is my meditation all the day." He thought on it deeply. You know, sometimes we think of meditation and we think of the New Age stuff and, you know, not very cool, but it's actually a very good idea to think deep and hard on things of God, and David did so. Look in verse 103. David says, "How sweet are thy words unto my taste, yea, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through thy precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way." So the words that he speaks of are the words of God that God gave in the commandments. What does he get through the words of God? Understanding. You know, it's something that people today, they look for understanding. They're looking for, well, why are we here? How did we get here? When did we get here? What's going to happen to us when we're gone? They're looking for understanding of the world that we live in. And without believing the scriptures, it's amazing what ends up being the only alternative. Disparity. Right? I mean, without a God, then there is no purpose. If there is no purpose, then we have no reason to live. And it's quite sad. But not for David. He believes in the Word of God, and he says that he gets delight from it, and he understands. He gets understanding from it. Go to verse 159. He says, "Consider how I love thy precepts. Quicken me, make him alive, O Lord, according to thy loving kindness. Thy word is true from the beginning, and every one of thy righteous judgments endureth forever." So, you know, David is a man who is very passionate about the Lord, and the law, you have to understand, is their center of their spiritual life, right? Without the law, they don't know how to be holy. They don't know how to be spiritual. It's through the law that they get all of that information, and it's how they deal with corporate worship. For time's sake, we won't go, but if you're making notes, Leviticus 23 references seven holy seasons. And how do they know about these holy seasons? For instance, you have feast days and so forth. All of that, Pentecost, you know, the Passover, all of those are given to us through the law, right? And the law gives them the occasions when they come together for corporate worship. Which is funny because the Sabbath day is not one of them. In fact, they're forbidden to do a lot of things on the Sabbath day, including travel, which when you come across your Seventh-day Adventist friends and they drive to work, you might want to point that out. Or drive to church on the Sabbath day, you might want to tell them that they're breaking the Sabbath. So it serves as a guide as to when they come together to worship the Lord, is to keep them separate. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 14. God needed to keep them separate and distinct. If there is no difference between them and the rest of the Gentiles, then there's no... How do you know God's working in there if there's no distinction? Think about that in our own lives, even under grace. If we're not distinct and separate... You know, Paul just tells us in Ephesians 4 to walk not as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of their mind, having their understanding darkened, because they don't have the life that is in Christ. same with the children of Israel. He says in verse 2 of Deuteronomy 14, did I tell you chapter 14? Mm-hmm. All right. For thou art an holy people. Why are they a holy people? God said they're a holy people. Unto the Lord thy God, and the Lord hath chosen thee to be a peculiar people unto himself above all the nations that are upon the earth. So how are they to be that peculiar people? It's through this law. It keeps them separate. He has chosen them to be peculiar and holy, separated and individualized. And the results of this include dietary laws, what they can and cannot eat, their eating habits. Sexual habits are given in here, clothing habits, even the way they cut their beards. And all this goes, if you want the references from Leviticus, if you go start in chapter 1 and you go through chapter 19, you're going to see all of these being touched upon. And as we saw even in Exodus 19 about the peculiarity of the people. It also served as a middle wall of partition between the Jews and the Gentiles. We see Paul mentioning that in Ephesians 2. Let's go to Ephesians because we're going to jog on over to the New Testament. And this is how I kind of got into this. I've heard over and over again about this in chapter 2, verse 11, where Paul tells these Gentiles in Ephesians 2 that, hey, you need to remember something. And the word remember carries the understanding of having this information at the forefront of your mind. In other words, you should be able to call it to speak it at any moment. You shouldn't have to stop and ponder and think about and meditate to recall the information. Remembering means it's right there and you don't have to think about it. It's just like an instinct or a reaction. Remember. What are we to remember? That you being in time past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands. So what's the issue here? The fact that they were Gentiles and the fact that they were uncircumcised, right? That at that time, the time past, you were without Christ. So even during Christ's earthly ministry, because he came to those who were under the law, they were without him, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. That's a big problem, right? Because who has the covenants? Who's dealing with God?
Israel,
right? So to be an alien from the commonwealth means that you have no dealings with God. That's why you're without Christ. It makes sense. Strangers from the covenants of promise. Notice how it's covenants. It's not just one covenant. Most of the time I've heard it's just about this, the law of Moses. That's what we were aliens and strangers from. But in fact, it has to do with every single one of the covenants that we've been dealing with, and even the new one that we'll deal with in the next session. Let's keep going. And having no hope and without God in the world, but now in Christ Jesus. Notice it's the position that we're in Christ Jesus. You sometimes were far off, are made nigh by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, who hath made both one. Who's the both? Right. There's no distinction, right? I mean, this is way over here. We're going to do outside of this. I mean, you got both, one, right? No distinction. Those who were first trusted and you who also trusted, all both one, right? In the same body. And have broken down, this is already past, the middle wall of partition between us. Well, what separated the Jew and the Gentile in times past?
Circumcision.
I mean, it was so bad that if you had the temple, you had the guy up front, you had your men, and then you had your women and children, and outside the gate, outside the walls, then the Gentiles could come out to hear it. They were separated, right? And it was because they were unclean. Why were they unclean? According to the law. They were unclean. So it goes on to say, having abolished in his flesh. If you notice the end of verse 13, there's a period. Okay? And you know that because from verse 11, 12, and 13 is one sentence. Verse 14, verse 15, verse 16, and all the way down to the end of verse 17 is another sentence. So we're dealing with two sentences here. Okay? He's our peace, made both one, broken down the middle wall of partition between us, semicolon. having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, for to make in himself of twain, both one, two, one new man, so making peace. The peace is with God. You didn't have any of that. Why? And, we get addition to, verse 16, that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the cross, not at the cross, by the cross. It's a method. It's not a timing issue. It's a method. Having slain the enmity thereby. Well, what was the enmity? Having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in... he abolished the law. The enmity was the law. That was the wall. And came and preached peace to them which were far off and to them that were nigh. At the end of verse 17. It serves as a wall to keep the nation of Israel separate and distinct. As we mentioned earlier, Romans 3, it says that the law was given to reveal sin. Go to Galatians. I love the passage in Galatians in 3. People think that, oh, the law is added to show how good we are. Mm-hmm. And then that's the attitude of people that keep the law, or try to keep the law, or say that they try to keep the law. They're like, look how good I am. And that's exactly the opposite of what the Bible says in verse 19. Wherefore then serveth the law, Paul asks, Galatians 3:19. What's the purpose of the law? It was added because of transgressions. You see, they were going against God without the law even being there telling them, don't do this. All right, and we're very good at that. We're good at breaking against and going up against God. He says it was added because of transgression till the seed should come. What does that tell us? Who's the seed, by the way? Christ, right? He's going to come. We're going to squeeze him in over here until he's going to come. It's a particular seed, and that's what Paul is arguing in Galatians 3, is about a particular seed. Not seeds, plural, but a seed. He's talking about Christ. It's serving until the seed come to whom the promise was made. We think about it, the promises made to Abraham and so forth, but there was a promise that was made to Christ. And that's how we get into the picture. Because God made a promise to Christ, and we read in Ephesians 2, because we are in Christ Jesus. We're no longer far off or made nigh. Okay, so we keep going. And was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. Who was the mediator? Back here. Moses. Right? He's the mediator of the first covenant. There's going to be a second covenant. Jesus will be the mediator of that one. Both of them are dedicated with blood, by the way. So the law was really given to make one, an individual, more of a sinner. It was never to give anyone the concept that they are more righteous. It was to give them the understanding that they were not up to God's standards.
So the law was more about blood than it was actually keeping the law.
Well, no one kept the law. So without the shedding of the blood, there was no way to have righteousness within the law. Now, like, how does one say, like Joseph has said of him, he was a just man? Well, how is he a just man? He didn't keep the whole law. He had to offer the right sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Paul says that he touched the righteousness within the law blameless. You know, what the sacrifices were. So without that blood, while it did not take away sins, the blood of the animals covered. And that's what the atonement is. It has to do with covering the law. And when the law is covered, then the Lord doesn't see through the blood to the law. And without the law, there is no transgression of the law so that it can be remitted at that time. Now, it doesn't take him away. He needs something more powerful than that to take it away. And that's where Christ will come in. But, yeah, I mean, it's centrally located in those sacrifices. Because without those sacrifices, you have no one having anything other than curses coming your way.
That's how they received the blessings, the curses
of. They had to keep the law. And if they trespassed it, they had to bring the right sacrifice for it. And when they did that, that covered their sin. And they were holy again before God. Now they had to do it over and over again. So, you deal with those to whom the law was given, right? It was given to Israel. And you think about, it says here in Galatians about Christ coming. Go down to verse 23, Galatians 3:23. But before faith came, we were kept under the law. So you know that Paul is speaking to a Jewish audience. We have to understand that in the book of Galatians. Otherwise, we mess it all up. Never does Paul say to a bunch of Gentiles, we were under the law. Paul's a Jew. He knows he's a Jew. He was under the law. They were under the law. But before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up unto the faith which should afterwards be revealed. Wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us, those who were under the law, to Christ. Christ was their refuge. I mean, he came so that he could deliver those under the law. But that we might be justified by faith, not by the law, but justification by faith. But after that faith has come, we are no longer under a schoolmaster, the law. No longer under the schoolmaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, does the law justify anyone? Now, we read in Galatians 2 and verse 16, and most of us are familiar with this passage. This is how I'm going to close. I got two questions. One, does it justify anyone? It says, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. One more passage in Romans 3 and verse 20. Romans 3 and verse 20, therefore, by the deeds of the law there shall no flesh be justified in his sight. For by the law is the knowledge of sin. Alright, so we understand. Is the Old Testament designed to give them justification? No. Why is that? Well, we think logically through this. The blood and bulls of goats does not take away sins. Which means that if it's not taken away, then they cannot be justified. Justification means that you have been, all of your sins are completely eradicated and taken away from you, and you never answer to them ever again. Now there's a difference though between justification and righteousness. See, there's the question. Does it provide righteousness? Let's go over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Look in verse 24. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 24. You know it does not provide justification. Well, let's look at what it says here in verses 24 and 25. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes. Who's the us? The Israel, right? To fear the Lord our God for our good always, that He might preserve us alive as it is at this day. And it shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God as He hath commanded us. So what is going to be their righteousness? It. And it is the statutes. So does it provide righteousness? Paul says, yeah, touching the righteousness which is in the law, there was access to righteousness. So while we are very clear to say no one kept the law, we can also say that there's those who were declared righteous before God because they did offer the right sacrifices and did all of the right do's and don'ts and whatever to get to the point to where they can have the righteousness of the law simply by doing the things commanded therein. Good one. Alright. So that's about it for the Old Covenant. And again, this isn't old at the time that it's written. It doesn't call itself Old Covenant or Old Testament. But it is only because there's a newer one coming out. It's like the better model. Anybody have any questions about the Old Covenant? Obviously, we can't touch every aspect of it, but the general idea is that it's conditional. It's to Israel. It's about blood. It's about sacrifices. It's about their way of life, their corporate worship, the way that they deal with their spiritual side, the way that they're sanctified, the way that they're holy, the way that they're separated. And they just have to keep doing it until Christ comes. It was always temporary until the Christ came. So we'll pause here and we'll take a little break, and we'll come back in a few minutes, and we'll deal with the last one of them, which is the new covenant, and we'll see how that plays into what we are in today in the age of grace.